Hi, this is Bob McCowan. John Shannon and I are taking the week off. I know. But everybody's got to have a week off. While you're sitting there, here's one of the best of the Bob McCowan podcasts. Hope you enjoy it. And we'll see you back here live next week. With Strombo, George Strombolopoulos is with us from Greater Los Angeles, California. You were given the role of host of Hockey Night in Canada and in general of the new hockey broadcast when Rogers took over this for a mere $5.2 billion. It was a your announcement was surprising to a lot of people. The announcement of you taking the role was surprising to a lot of people from the perspective that your history in sports, at least visually, was almost non-existent. You'd done a lot of stuff and had a lot of notoriety, but this was something that you hadn't really dabbled in, and maybe hadn't dabbled in since you worked at The Fan. Isn't that right?
That was the last time I was full-time in sports, for sure. Absolutely. I spent a lot of time, you know, being a part of events or being part of special broadcasts. You know, for example, that new Hockey Night in Canada theme, my show did that. Our show ran the campaign to do that. We brought in the musicians. We found the singer. Our whole production team, it was my talk show. We're the ones who found that Hockey Night in Canada theme. So we were a big part of it and the storytelling in the country for a long time, but certainly not on television. No, definitely not. People didn't know that.
So explain the genesis of how the conversation even happened. Was it with Keith Pelly? Was it with somebody else?
Yeah, I got a text message from somebody else. So when the Rogers deal was announced, I just like heard it the way everybody else did on social media. And I was still doing the talk show at CBC at the time. And I heard the story and I thought, cool, that'll be interesting. I don't think it's going to work, but that'll be interesting. And I don't even know what month that was, John, you might remember better than I do, but.
It was the Monday or Tuesday after Grey Cup. So it was late November.
Okay, there you go. So then it was only a couple of weeks later then, when maybe a week or so later, when I got a text message from somebody inside the Rogers world saying, do you want to talk? And I said, sure. I texted them back. And then we met in a hotel lobby in Toronto where they were really worried about being spotted with me, and we talked just sort of in a very cursory way about would I be interested in coming over. And then from there, then there was a conversation with Keith Pelly, then there was a conversation with Gary, and I kind of said the same thing to them that I said to myself: I'll do it, but I don't think you guys want this. You guys don't. I to be honest with you, just never thought that they had the stomach for what it would take to do it right. And they're like, no, we want it. And I could tell. And then, so then I was like, you know what, this isn't going to work, but I know that I could do this because here's the thing, Bob, which is it's one thing to, and I said this to one of the guys who worked there at the time. Yes, I may be new in hockey, but I might be the most experienced host to ever take over Hockey Night in Canada. Like, I'm a grown ass person who's done this a long time as a host. I've done a lot of stuff and I can host a show. If you want me to be a hockey analyst, no. But if you want an experienced host, sure, I can do it. And I said to them, look, my first choice is to watch Ron McLean do Hockey Night in Canada. But if he's not going to be the guy, then I want it to be me. So I'll take the job. But I went in with open eyes. I knew what this was going to be.
The other thing in this, George, you had already created almost by osmosis, a really good relationship with people within the NHL. You had been around award shows. You had been around big events. The people in New York were very familiar with your work, which was a huge asset to you, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. It was. But I think it was organic in that, and it was very natural because I didn't want to work I didn't want to work in the system. I was very, and I think they like this about me. I told them that they're falling behind. Like, I think that the sports broadcast is not keeping up with where the culture is going. You watch this happen during the George Floyd Black Lives Matter situation. You watch, like, most sports broadcasters fell apart and networks fell apart in trying to handle that. Most did. Hockey was light years behind. Light years behind. And but I didn't say that in a bad way to them. I was just saying that I think the kind of broadcasting that I want to do and where I think we need to go. And they just liked that I was up front with them. But I do like them as people. I like Gary a lot. I like John Collins a lot. And we got along really well. But it was never designed to work in hockey. That was never part of the plan. Like I didn't think that was going to happen.
Do you think you were dealt a fair deal?
You know, I never, to be honest, if I'm being honest with you, I don't think about this in the context of fair at all. I knew what I was getting into. I knew that if they let me do the thing that they told me they wanted me to do, not only could we have made it work, but I knew pretty quickly that they probably weren't going to do it. But I also wasn't really worried about fair. So I don't worry about fair because you know what? I signed up, I signed a contract. We made an agreement. Everything went the way I thought it would go. It was 1 year shorter than I thought it would be. I thought we'd probably get 3 years, but that didn't bother me. So I don't think it was unfair. I just think it was.
You know, George, I will remind you of one thing. You and I were at the draft in South Florida. And I became your chauffeur because we didn't really want to travel with anybody else. So it was you and me in the car most of the time, back and forth from the arena. And we had one of those great conversations about where it needed to go and what it needed to be. And you actually had already done your last broadcast at Hockey Night by now. You didn't know that yet. But you were quite confident that the things that you had envisioned for the show were going to be the right things.
Well, you know what it was, John? It was actually the year before. So it was, I had one more season to go. Because I remember that when I'd finished my Stanley Cup final game, I suspected that I didn't think it was going to come back. And then I got the call saying, hey, you don't need to come to the draft, but it wasn't just me. They were changing up the system. So we had one more year. I knew I had a very clear vision of where that show should have gone. And I was wondering if we were going to get a shot at it, but behind the scenes with my team, I was very upfront with them. I'm like, and when Keith left to go do whatever it is that Keith does, I was just like, there's no way this is going to last.
So can you, any chance you can share what your vision was for that next go around for you there?
Well, I mean, this wasn't specific so much to Hockey Night, but it was specific to, this was specific to Hockey Night in terms of how I would do it. But where I thought sports broadcasting was wrong, I said, we live in an era where, do you guys swear on this broadcast ever?
Sure.
I'll try not to, but we just live in an era where everybody's so full of shit all the time. And most of the time it's because we're asking them to do things that they can't do. So I remember as a hockey viewer and then working there, I always thought the hockey analysis was so backwards because you're asking people, like if we held them by their record, they're wrong all the time. In that we're going to do, this is what this player needs to do. And then the following week, it was a completely different story. And I understand that that's the human component of sports. But I remember saying we need to reduce the opportunity for people to look stupid and create space where we redefine what sports is. Because sports right now, I think, is in terms of broadcasting there's a lot of just things being wrong, which I just didn't think from my background doing news and journalism was not what you should hang your hat on. But also I thought it's not building the community enough. It's not connecting with enough people, and it's not actually growing in the way that everybody else was growing online and growing in other places. So, I also just looked anecdotally at the people in my life and their kids, and none of them cared about hockey. None of them cared about hockey. And I said, hockey broadcasting has spent a lot of time excluding people. You've got to become inclusive and create storytelling that's inclusive. That's how it should have grown. This is like, this, by the way, was before I even took the show. I remember saying to them, you guys are hyper exclusive. And I had a lot of hockey players, NHLers, tell me they thought Hockey Night in Canada was a racist broadcast. Hockey players. And they were telling me that. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. And I wanted to help change that perception. Whether that's true or not is irrelevant. This is just what NHLers were telling me, right? And so I thought that the show needed to become more. I'm not saying that it isn't that now. I'm just saying that's what I wanted to do with it at the time.
I look back at my departure occasionally and wonder if I saw it coming. And I didn't. As you look back on it now, a few years later, did you see it coming? Did you think you should have seen it coming, your departure?
I knew that I wasn't there for long. I knew that I was there to do a thing that I didn't think, like I said, they had the stomach for. So did I see it coming? I did. I did see it coming, Bob. But I'll say this. I remember trying to figure my own exit strategy. I was trying to figure out my own way out before it happened. So I kind of...
Why? Why, George? You were unhappy?
It wasn't that I was unhappy more. It was just more like I'm at a stage in my career where I want to do things that have that are culturally relevant and have impact and move the conversation forward. And I didn't get the sense that, well, in fact, I clearly got the sense that that wasn't something that they were that interested in. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, well, so then that's not what I signed up for. But again, I'm not the kind of person who is, I don't begrudge them. I don't think it's unfair. It's just in our business, and I'm very practical about this business, and I have a very 360 view about this business, which was, oh, so a team brought me in to do a thing. That team is no longer the team that was there. Keith had left. And I went, oh, I just know how this works. So now the new group wants a different thing. They wanted a more conservative,
traditional broadcast.
Yeah, totally. And I was trying to explain to them that traditions have to evolve. But they wanted a thing that I didn't want to do. And so I was like, oh, cool. I signed up to do a thing. You changed the path. This isn't a good fit anymore. So I had no hard feelings toward them. I'm very grown up about it. And I don't agree with a lot of the things they did, but I also don't, it's not like I'm right. It was just a choice. We just had different ways that we wanted to do this. And I've done this, you know, Bobcat, like you put me on the air with you almost 30 years ago when I was doing promotions at the Fan when you were doing the mornings. And, you know, even from back then, I was very clear-eyed about what this business is. So I was never surprised. And I think one of the best parts about being in the U.S. as much as I have been, you have shows and don't have shows all the time. It's a very natural part of the industry. Only in Canada does it become this crazy news story. But I'm like, no, this is just how the shows work. Some of my favorite people have had 9 shows in their careers, and sometimes they chose the end, sometimes they didn't. That's just the business. So I've always approached this that way.
Well, but that also speaks of the microscope of hockey in our country. More than anything else. I mean, the iconic level that is, was, and to an extent still is the hockey night in Canada. Based on just listening to you, and you and I haven't ever talked about this, I almost think that you were 10 years ahead of yourself. I mean, if you could be the host of Hockey Night in Canada tomorrow, I think there'd be a greater acceptance inside the building and out.
I'll go one step further, John, and I've not told this to anybody, but because I have such a mountain of respect for both you guys, I'll tell you the story. So when they offered me the show, here's what I told them. Here's exactly what I told them. I said, I'll do it. Here's the plan. Let Ron do the early game. Give me the late game. Let me do it with Merrick. Let me build a team around the late game. Let me build a culture in the late game. Ron is a legend. Let Ron do the early game. Everybody on that side said, no, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it. And I said, guys, because here's the one thing, and I say this with love and respect to most sports TV people, less so radio, but more sports TV people. The one thing that most sports TV people who come from cable don't really understand is they don't understand Canada. They don't understand that an important broadcast is actually about building an emotional and intellectual railroad across the country. Most cable sports people don't understand that. But having my experience at CBC, your experience at CBC, previously my experience at Much Music, I understood, hey, there's a way to do this. When they did that video, which I was a part of, and it was one of the reasons that I realized this isn't going to work, bragging about the money they spent on the set, I thought, what a mistake. Yeah. What, talk about not understand, not being able to read the room. So, Bob, when I say that I didn't see it coming, I did see it coming because I knew early on that those markers you're looking for, if something's going to be a success, weren't there. And John, I said to them, let Ron do the early game. I'll do the late game. Trust me, because Ron, I understand Ron's, this is going to be difficult. I get all this. I've done this, right? I know how this is going to work. So let me earn the spot, even though as a host, I don't have to prove my wares, because as a host, I can do this. but let me earn the thing. They said, no way. So whenever I ended up leaving, and then they did that. Ron got the early game. I was like, you guys didn't get it. That I didn't just say it for out of nowhere. I'm very strategic about this. I know how this can work. And so I did plan that early. So definitely we were ahead of our time.
I will tell you one story, because I don't think people, and perhaps it's changed now, but I don't think people understand the difference of working for the CBC than working for private broadcasters. And the role the CBC plays and the attitude the CBC has, there's a greater inclusiveness at the CBC. And on a Saturday night, I had hired a young guy who was a producer, a really good producer, still is a great producer, had come from TSN and was doing his first Saturday night game for us at the Montreal, at the Bell Center, had just moved. We'd moved over the new building. And halfway through the second period, he did something that to me was just like, how could you do that? And I picked up the phone to him and I said, hey, listen, Paul, I don't know what you're doing, but this ain't cable TV anymore. You're in the big leagues. And now we're still friends and we laugh about it about every 3 or 4 months when we say, hey, listen, you're now at a network level. And that's the difference.
This is for the people.
That's right. That's right. And that's what, and you were taught that at the CBC. You were taught a lot of things at the CBC.
For sure. And I learned it even earlier at Much Music, whereas at Much Music, I understood what young people, you know, I understood how to reach people who didn't feel reached. You know, what's interesting that never came out, because I know in all those stories, when I became the host, all these stories were being, and I know those stories, how they got to the newspapers.
It was all about the pants, George, it was all about the pants.
Listen, anybody who criticized my pants, I don't value their opinions in the first place. But here's what the people told me at Hockey Night in Canada when I was the host. Here's what they told me directly. The ratings were going up when I was the host with people under 30 and with women. The ratings were going up with people under 30, which is what I was there to do, to grow the game. And so the ratings were going up, but that stuff never got written about. And again, I don't worry about it now, because I like what I do, and my time in sports and hockey is not over by a long shot, right? So there's still plenty in the works. But I knew that I was doing a version of the right thing at the time. Were we ahead of our time? I'll say this. I don't think we were ahead of our time. I think they were just that far behind.
Okay.
I think they were that. Yeah. It was long time for a show like that. They were just behind. I remember sitting there with the guys telling them, you guys don't understand that basketball is going to be more important. And they went, no, never happened. And then a year and a half later, the Raptors were the most valuable franchise in the country, and the Raptors won the title. I said, you sure can see it, because the one thing that you can't deny is momentum. And you could see momentum coming. You could see it. And I was just saying, we need to grow this. Again, I don't have any problems with what they're doing. I think the show's great. I watch it all the time. I still enjoy it. It was just a different kind of show.
I want to go back to the pants, because you brushed that off like it was nothing.
No, but that was an internal joke. That was an internal joke. We used to go in the wardrobe room. I mean, George's pants were the same size as my sleeves. I mean, that's how bad it was.
Oh, well, I get that. That goes almost without saying. I'm sitting here, Strombolopoulos, I'm sitting here with a sweater thing that McPhee in Vegas sent over for our friend Shannon. I didn't know there was much material in the world.
He's gonna call the tent maker now. Now he's gonna call the tent maker.
But look, here's the thing. It was, and you know me, I'm a guy who's never driven down the middle of the road. Shannon was a suit. I don't criticize him for it. Never did. John used to come in when he was co-hosting with me at 4 o'clock, and he'd be there with his suit and tie on. And I'd be there with maybe a sweater, maybe a shirt, generally a pair of pants, but it didn't really matter what I was putting on.
What do you mean generally a pair of pants?
Just generally had a pair of pants on.
Yeah.
But you weren't sitting behind a desk where the pants didn't matter. You were there were full body shots of you. And whatever difference there was between McLean and you, and there were plenty, that was one that a lot of people focused on. And it was laughable to me that this was a big deal. Did anybody come to you and say, be a little bit more conservative?
Not only did they, but they used those words. They used those words. You need to be a little bit more conservative. And I said, no. I said, no. I said, because I think that's a mistake. I'll tell you something. Don't bring me into the party. When you, like, if you want that, I'm the wrong guy to do the show.
Right.
You got to change the show around the host. That's how it should. It's got to match the driving force of the show. And I think about primetime all the time, Bob, because, and you can ask me any question you want, and I'll say this regardless of what you ask me. I was really inspired by, in my early stages of my career, being on the air at a station and producing at a station that you were on, because you were clearly in control of the narrative of your career. And you are smart enough to know how to build mythology, how to, you know, work within an organization. But at the same time, it was about serving the audience. And where, but not just where you were, but where, and a great example was you wouldn't interview athletes too often because, you, and I remember you saying this, and I was 22 years old. You wouldn't bring athletes on because you said they don't say anything and it's usually just a lie. And you wouldn't bring too many on because they were not living up to the brand of the show. And so primetime meant something. It's the very same thing with me and that broadcast at Hockey Night, which was, we're here to change it. So it's like if you split up with somebody and you still live on their couch, I'm not living on anybody's couch. In fact, change the furniture, right? So I didn't think I was in the wrong by any means. It was very different from the previous host, but they didn't bring me there to be that version. Otherwise, they would have kept him because he was still there. I was throwing to him once, and now time for Coach's Corner. So, like, he was still there. So, of course, it's going to be different. They didn't need to change the host of the show, but if they were going to change the host of the show, then they brought in a guy. That guy should have been him. I was never the guy that the suit fit in that. I was never just going to be plugged into a broadcast. I was there to change it. And I felt like we helped move that conversation a little bit, and now it is a little bit different. But they definitely said, be more conservative. And I laughed at that.
Well, I'm intrigued too by, did Pelly come back to you and ask you to be conservative? Because Pelly was edgy, if nothing else.
You know, Pelly, not only was Pelly in my corner, Pelly, there were times where I kind of talked Pelly off the ledge. Not about me, but other things, I think. Like, Pelly believed. Pelly was like, no, you keep doing this. This is the right way to do this. Yeah, he knew it. He liked the suits. Pelly's the one that told me to grow the beard back. Like, I was growing a beard. He says, I like you with the beard. Like, and I was like, oh, I have the beard. I'm going to wear it anyway. He says, I like it. Like, Pelly understood that to do this right takes time. You know, I wasn't mad by any means that people didn't like the change. Ron McLean's a legend, man. Are you kidding? I understood that. I love Ron McLean. When I had my talk show, Ron was on countless times. Like, I knew that. So I wasn't mad that people were laughing at my clothes, because the truth is, I know the suits were amazing. They were amazing. I knew the suits were modern. So I knew that it was the right time. I also knew that if people were focusing on my suits, that's good, because it actually allows us to do the other things we need to do. And you know this, Bob, because you've cultivated a career of this. First, they laugh at you, then they attack you, then they accept you, then they fight for you. I knew that this is, like, you think that when I started doing a primetime news show on CBC, wearing black t-shirt and a studded belt, interviewing a prime minister, there were people who did not know what to make of it. But you know what spoke for themselves? The interviews. And 10 years later, we were the only late night talk show in the country. And by the way, there hasn't been one since. We had a decade run. So I knew how to do this. I knew how to change I knew how to shift the tides in the sea. And it was the same approach to Hockey Night. The difference was the Rogers people weren't designed for progress. That wasn't like their thing. Mm. Whereas Keith was designed for it, I believe.
Yeah, there's no question about that. That Keith had vision a lot different than many people. The one thing I would say, having sat in one of those many chairs when I was a suit and at Hockey Night, long before George was around, was I say this all the time. I said, you know, is that hockey on television in Canada, you have to understand it, because we lived in a country for the longest time is we had a political party called the Progressive Conservatives. And when if you put your mind to thinking about a progressive conservative, that's how hockey coverage has been for 60 years, progressively conservative. And so any change you if you make sudden change to a television show like Hockey Night in Canada, you better be prepared for criticism early on and then be loyal to your change. And John, there wasn't enough loyalty. And no. but George, I'm talking, it had to be five years of change. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. But you saw me every Saturday night, John. I still laughed. I had everybody laughing on the air. I still had a smile because I know what this is. I have the stomach for it. And you're exactly right. You can't do it in 1 year. You can't do it in 2 years.
No.
But again, I go back to this idea, which is everybody wants something conservative. But now what happens when there's a pandemic? Those same conservatives were scrambling for government assistance. I guess you don't really believe in it, right? So you have to build an infrastructure for everybody. You have to be inclusive. And I think that Hockey Night in Canada is like the Tonight Show was. Every country has a thing where you better be for everybody. And if you're not for everybody, in my mind, you're for nobody. And that old school version of, look, I mean, I don't know how many times it's happened, John, when you were running Hockey Night in Canada, but countless times during my run there, I would have conversations with Grapes about like, dude, what are you saying? Like, what are you saying? You shouldn't say that. And Don respected me enough to go back and forth. So I wanted to say to Don, that's not the approach. And I did say that to him a couple of times and he listened to me. He didn't change his behavior, but I always respected Don because he would say something and you could talk to him about it.
I agree completely.
I wanted to change that segment. I didn't want that segment to go away. In fact, when they offered me the show, I said, you better keep Ron and Don on. Yeah. I said, you better keep them on, But I thought Don, the thing about Don is Don was never not who Don was. So the guy that you saw on the last broadcast is the guy you saw on the first broadcast. And consistent. That's Don Cherry. People loved him for that reason. People didn't love him for that reason. Some people despised him for that reason. Don knew who Don was. He was committed to the bit. And I think you're right. They had to be committed to the bit. I was.
Yeah. And that to me is, and this goes back to what you learned the second day if you go to university about this business, is that what viewers need is they need consistency. And you can define your own consistency. You can define it, but then you better stick with it. Then you better say, this is what we're doing. I mean, to talk about my own world is that, when I went back to Hockey Night in 94, we started the doubleheader. We started a pregame show the year after, to the point where everybody said, well, there was always a pregame show and there was always a doubleheader. Well, no, we evolved into that. We changed it. We moved things along in order to make it better and to change it all the time. But we did it. We didn't do it as drastically and as dramatically as they tried with you. We were a little more, listen, we're going to make five changes this year, five changes next year, five changes the year after. And by the time 5 years came up, everybody thought it was always that way.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's interesting though, is that I actually don't think they were drastic enough when they brought me on, because I think what they did,
I agree.
They brought me on and then they just kept the same kind of show but they made it more technical, which was not how you approach a nationwide audience, right? You have to let personality and you have to let storytelling, and you actually have to let, it's the same reason why every show, it's the same reason like Bobcat, I don't know, I'm sure you have so many fond memories of you and Shaky. Like what people really respond to is relationships and dynamics. And you have to create relationships and dynamics. And we could have done that. The problem was they made it too, it just wasn't the right, it wasn't committed enough to the change is what I thought. I said this to them then. Again, I say this with no ill will. I'm not criticizing anybody. It's just the business. But I went, this is how you do it. This is not how you do it.
Yeah, it's interesting. This is a conversation you, George, and I could have for days about where the show was, where the show needs to go, what needs to happen, and how to get there. It's a fascinating conversation. At least it is for me.
They have great people there now, great people on air, great producers. They did when I was there. I like the pacing of the show. Again, it's very much what it's always been, but that's what, if that's what Rodgers wants to do, then at least they're sticking to that. But I like the analysts they have on. I like the conversations they had on. You know, I say this for all sports media, everybody just scrambled during when the civil uprising happened. You could see sports broadcasters were 100 years behind the conversation. You know, it is a strange day when the athletes were more progressive than the broadcasters. It's a strange day when the athletes were more progressive than musicians. And that's where we are. And sports took a long time to catch up, not just Canada, globally.
Oh, yeah. Agreed.
We want to take one more quick break and we'll come back with more with Strombo after this. We were chatting earlier. Well, you two guys actually were chatting earlier, and I was going to ask.
This is the quietest Bob has ever been in one of these podcasts, George, just for the record. I mean, this is.
Well, I have enough respect for Strombolopoulos that I enjoy listening to what he has to say. As often as not, I have no idea what he's talking about, but that's not the point here. This show is not done for my entertainment or yours, for that matter, Shannon. But I was actually going to ask, you know, as a guy who ran Hockey Night in Canada and a guy who hosted Hockey Night in Canada, would the guy who ran Hockey Night in Canada have hired this guy as a host?
Absolutely. This is the magic elixir that people don't understand about me is I'm a riverboat gambler. I love taking chances, but I'm also very loyal and I believe in people.
Bobcat, when John was doing Leafs TV, he asked me to come and be one of the regular panelists on that sports show years before Hockey Night. I was on that and I enjoyed it. I didn't need the extra shift. I didn't need the extra work. I did it because I loved it and I respected John. He actually did bring me on Leafs TV.
So, and for the record, I paid George no cash. So the CRI can't get after him. But he said, John, I just want a Leafs pass. I want a media pass. I said, well, I can do that, George. Yeah. So George got a media pass, but the magic of, and you know, I had forgotten about that. We had a Saturday morning practice show, and I loved Saturday mornings at the Gardens. I loved Saturday mornings at Air Canada Center. And we put the set in the corner of the event level. So any player walking by could see that we were on television. And when George was standing there, you'd be amazed how many players said, hey, hi, George. And next thing you know, there's an open mic sitting at the end of the desk and the guy would stand for 5 minutes. And all of a sudden you're getting visiting players, Maple Leaf players on a Saturday morning, the day of a game, having a conversation. How you doing, man? Yeah. That's the ultimate storytelling. That's the ultimate storytelling.
One thing that will never, it won't happen this year, but one day it'll happen. I had a plan for a pregame show that, John, you would have loved. So I wanted to completely change how we did Hockey Night, a pregame show that was all, it would have been about a year and a half ahead of its time, but only a year and a half. And yeah. I think we could have helped expedite it, but it was based a lot around how I related to those players and how you can actually get them. Again, because I love hockey so much, and I love it so much that, unlike a lot of people in the Canadian sports business, I wanted Sunbelt teams to do well. And I kept saying to them, do you love this game? Yeah. Do you think this is a great game? Yeah. Do you want your Canadian players to have jobs? Yeah. Well, we want every city to succeed in hockey. Yeah. And most of the Canadian stories were centered around how they weren't working. And they just fed into this negative stereotype. And a lot of those hockey players who I know and still talk to who played in those teams, they hated how ostracized they felt about where they played. And I wanted, and we were doing that on that Saturday morning practice show. You know,
it's hard funny.
Get me to wake up on a Saturday morning. I was just coming home, John, when I had to go to that broadcast.
And you know what? In those days, most of the players were too.
Yeah, the line I used to use was, I'm not quite done throwing up yet. So,
but to answer your question though, Bob, listen, I love change. Change is good. Change means people think, you know, and then just stick with it and be patient and let it happen. That's the magic of it.
You know, you're preaching to the converted in the other two boxes on the screen. So, Look, we started this conversation with a brief, what are you doing now? Other than sitting in California and talking to a couple of old guys in Toronto. But what do you want? What's left on the agenda for you to want to do? If I could snap my fingers like this and say, Georgie, you got whatever you want. What is it?
You know, in a weird way, Bob, in my entire career, which is what, 29, this year actually is 30 years this year. I only once in my career have I said, I wish I could have done one thing longer, only once. And that was this radio show that I had in the late 90s. Every other show went how I thought it would go, or if it ended, it ended at the right time, either by their choice or by mine. But the only time I ever said I wanted to do one more thing was there was this one run of radio that I did that I felt like I left a little bit early, but it launched me into television. So I accepted the choice. So I was negotiating a new interview show, a new interview platform last year when Apple came and offered me this music show. And weirdly enough, they asked me to kind of do a newer version of that thing that I was talking about, that one thing I wished I could have done longer. So I said, oh, well, that doesn't happen too often. All right, mm-hmm. So I'm going to pause this because I'm going to do this. Plus, I like these people a lot and I wanted to help them launch the station and I'm having a blast. But I there's an interview thing that I'm working on. That's the thing that I'm going to bring back, a new interview kind of platform. My time in sports is definitely not finished, but interviewing is the thing that I really love to do. So I do it now in a very unofficial way and I do it on my Apple show. But that's the thing that I'm going to bring back is a kind of conversation show that I think there's a lot of room for, and that I think that I'm sort of uniquely positioned to do because of the wins and the losses, and the fact that I've interviewed world leaders, religious leaders.
Yeah,
and also just up and coming artists. You know, this Britney Spears thing that's been going on with Free Britney. My interview from Britney is circling from 20 years ago and it holds up. So I've been very lucky to be, and again, I say this sincerely, I've been very lucky that I worked for so many people who trained me to do this with a human heart, right? To really lean into being smart and interesting, and they challenged me to be better. So this isn't me. I am the result of great coaching and great bosses. And like I say, with very few exceptions, I've looked at the people who've helped put me in this position and go, I'm lucky because of you and I'm blessed because of you. So interviewing is the place that I think I can be really effective now in a bigger scale. And that's the next project that we're working on.
In networks, you've done something for ABC. You did CNN, obviously CBC. Mm-hmm. Now, and we're going to put Rogers in a different category. So there's fourth.
Yeah.
Too much structure? They're all too structured? Or was the CBC the least structured?
CBC might have been the most structured, actually, to be honest with you, because CBC had a different institutional burden that most of the other places don't have. I was the right guy to work at CBC because CBC generally needs their on-air people to be shark divers. When stuff goes wrong, which is basically always because Canadians love to complain about stuff, especially their public broadcasters. You need to have hosts. It's not unlike, Bob, what you were doing at The Fan, which is you need to have people who can jump in the water with the sharks and know they'll be just fine. You and I are very, I learned a lot from you. We're cageless divers. So I'm built for the CBC. I'm built for places like that. That's why I was the right guy for Hockey Night in Canada in terms of the right temperament, right? Mm-hmm. You got to be a cageless shark diver to take big things. I don't think they're too structured. I think what they are is, how do I say this without sounding... I just think they're unimaginative, and a lot of them, and they don't have conviction. You need to have convictions to grow with your people. You need to know the difference between following the conversation and leading the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something I learned really, really well at CBC with the producers, and they have very strong news judgment there. I learned how to balance the follow the conversation, but lead the conversation. And I think that networks are just doing what they're allowed to do. You know who I look at? It's the CRTC and the government. They just created this place where where multiple ownership and all this other stuff happens. Like, this is the this is exactly what the broadcasters were always going to do. We talked about this when deregulation happened. We knew this was going to happen. As you know, guys, for me, because I grew up calling talk radio stations when I was five, I love the business. I love radio. I love television. I love how you reach a people. And I love the responsibility you have. You know, your career is not just your experience. Your career is what memories and stories are you guiding the audience through. That's not about me. Like, all of us, if you do the job right, you're going to get all the perks and the benefits anyway. Don't aim for those. Aim for, have a responsibility to your people. That's the responsibility. And I love it so much. So I look at the broadcasters. I'm really curious to see how they update. And they're going to go through this again, because everybody talks about cord cutting, but that's such a BS story in the news. Media reporters in this country, cord cutting, they're just, all they're doing is shifting to internet service providers provided by the exact same companies. Cord cutting is not a real thing. The money's, they're still getting all of the benefits. So, like, it's just the media in the country doesn't know how to cover, you know, Canada Land does a really good job covering real news stories, but like the general business stories, it's not, cord cutting is not a thing. It's cord shifting. They're just shifting cord to wireless cord. You're watching Netflix on Bell or Rogers or Shaw anyway, right? And like, oh, Shaw versus Corus. I worked at Shaw Corus as well. I worked at Shaw when they created Corus. So I've worked for all the companies, I think, except for Bell. But I worked for Much, and Chum was sold to Bell. So I love the business stories, but I just think that the narrative around media in this country, is, in Canada, is just so unimaginative. And I think that it's nobody's fault. I think Canada is a, like, broadcasting in Canada is kind of like Canada itself. It's a beautiful thing. It has lots of benefits. It has lots of flaws. It has some spotty history. It has some tragic history. And to shift it, it's as difficult to shift the media in Canada as it is to shift Canada, because it's as difficult to shift Canadian perceptions. Canadians have a smug, and I'm a Toronto boy, so I know this very well. There's a smugness about Canada where it's like, everything's fine. It's not fine. It's not fine. But Canada, to me, like any country, isn't what you are. It's what you aspire to be. And so to me, when I talk about Canada, like, we're a country that has a very terrible history of residential schools, and there are countless communities that don't have clean drinking water now. You can't brag about a country where not everybody has access to clean drinking water. You can't. And it's like Dick Gregory, the civil rights activist, used to say, don't tell me about your nice smile if your brain has a tumor, because it doesn't matter. And if everybody doesn't have access to clean drinking water, then you don't count. Your bragging doesn't count. So I kind of look at Canada and Canadian broadcasting as a thing to aspire to be. Be the thing you keep saying you are. All the narratives you just bring out of the closet on Canada Day, right? Be that for real. And so I kind of look at the broadcasters and I wonder what they're going to do. You know, I look at what CBC did with Schitt's Creek, and I think that's fabulous. Kim's Convenience, that's fabulous. Those are real stories that are reaching people around the world. Look at Trailer Park Boys. It took a long time for Netflix to figure it out, but they figured it out. Trailer Park Boys, people stop me on the streets to talk about Trailer Park Boys all the time. Mm-hmm. Is that what Canada's like? And now Letterkenny. So be the shining example that you always say you are anyway. Be that thing. And I think that Canadian broadcasters have to kind of get there, because if they don't figure that out, the lack of CanCon with the streamers is going to really decimate the broadcasters in Canada.
Agreed.
When are you coming back to Canada? Speaking of Canada, what's your plan? Do you have one?
I'd like to. I'm just waiting for the border to open again, because right now I can't come back, because I have to go. I can't quarantine in a hotel for a week because I have to do a show. So I have a studio in my home. So I got to wait until I can get home and go right back to the studio and do a show.
Just pay the fine.
Well, I would do that, except for the part where it would be a nightmare. My social media people would be just so angry at me if I flouted the responsibility to be a good example.
Well, hey, no, this would be. Are you going to Burning Man? What's going on? I mean, every time you used to talk to me, you'd tell me how great Burning Man was.
John, I wish you came to Burning Man with me. Bob, you would have such a great time too. If Burning Man happens, I'll be there right away. Burning Man's the greatest thing I've ever done in terms of an experience, in a heartbeat.
Well,
I can imagine Bob and me at Burning Man, though. Holy smoke. Me and Bob at Burning Man?
I'll tell you one funny story before you go, is that I was at Burning Man one year, and I was like 3:30 in the morning, 4 in the morning at a rave thing out in the desert. It was really insane. There are 80,000 people there. It was just pure madness, and I'm just dancing and having a good time. And there's these two kids standing beside me, maybe they're 20, and they look over at me, and this one kid just says, "Strombo?" And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "What are you doing here?" And I'm like, "Bro, this is my place." And he looked at me and he went, "Awesome." And then he looked back at his friend and he swore. So I'll try not to say, he goes, "Holy F, the host of Hockey Night in Canada is at a rave with us." And I said, "You're damn right." He said, "This is awesome." And I said, "I know. See you in the playoffs." And then I walked away. So they were there. They were there. I can't wait to go back.
Oh, good.
When you get back here across the border, we'll get together, because it's been a while. It's been too long since we chatted face-to-face, and we'll have a beer or a Coke or something. And
and I say this sincerely, Bob, you have always been a shining example of stick to your guns. And you know that you don't always have to shoot them, but carry them with you. And that has always been, you know, I was very lucky to work in the early 90s at a radio station with, you know, you, Makowicz was there, and even Nelson was great to me, and they let me be me. And I learned watching you guys that be you is more important, because here we sit 30 years later and we're both, all three of us are still us for a living. And a lot of people don't get that privilege. And we have been very privileged to be us for a living. And I don't take it lightly, but I also don't forget where I learned it in those formative years. And you guys were a really big part of that.
Well, thank you, pal. That's very kind of you to say. And I know you, you say it with your heart. Thank you for your time today, as always. And talk to you soon. We'll see you soon. Stay healthy, okay?
You too. Thanks, guys.
Strombo, George Strombolopoulos on the podcast. That's it for us. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.